The Grade Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer podcast on the Diamond Tina podcast network. After 2.5 weeks touring the UK, we are back in the land of decent coffee and Scott Morrison jibes, and we're ready to review Lords. Two of us are anyway. We'll talk Archer, Smith, convenient morality, Labu Shane saving all, and everything in between before catching up with Logie-nominated presenter Trent Copeland to repeat the same talking points, of course, but with better answers from an actual expert. Ask TGC is a litany of blokes wanting internet validation, just imagine that, and will begrudgingly give them exactly that. I'm here with Dave Edwards. He goes, I believe, is asleep, recovering from jet lag, as we all are in many ways. So, Dave, hello, and how do you think Higos is doing?
Mate, you've channeled Higos perfectly there with the enthusiasm at the start of the cast. Really good, good stuff from you. Higos, where is he? Well, there's no blue ticks. You've obviously been questioning Higos on the TGC WhatsApp thread as to his whereabouts, and he hasn't seen any of these messages since, I think, this morning. I'm just looking at it now. I wrote a WhatsApp question. Fuck it. It's not even a question. Fuck, it's good to have good coffee again to the group. No one replied to that for a while.
There's grey double ticks, not the blues.
Yeah, well, I've got the blues for that one. So he saw that, didn't want to answer it. But since then, nothing from Higos. So he's been MIA for about 12 to 14 hours, I'm worried.
Look, we don't know what's going to happen on this cast, Dave. I mean, we've kind of...
No, well, there's no Higos to direct us. I mean, actually, have we done a cast sans Higos ever?
Well, not in the Grade Cricketer iteration. Of course, we had many casts beforehand and radio shows beforehand.
10,000 hours.
Yeah. 10,000. We've done 10,000 hours with people that know that. Never, ever investigate those B-sides. But I think we can do it. We can definitely work something out here. It can go in any direction, really. We were both at Lords for a couple of days. We missed a few as coming home. It feels really strange. It feels really jarring to have, like, been somewhere then seeing it on TV at, like, 3 a.m. in the morning. But, I mean, yeah. I guess the drop-down is, like, it was a thrilling draw. You know, like, what were your thoughts? Like, is Test cricket back, baby, or what?
I think it's back, isn't it? I mean, how much play was there really in that test? Like, you only need 3 days to have a thrilling test, it seems. So, geez, I mean, you know, a lot of overheads could be saved if tests were just 3 matches. But, you know,
that was my first thought.
Well, that was your first thought. Well, I've stolen it.
What about the the overheads they've saved?
Always concerned about overheads. I mean, you know that about me. Look, in terms of the test, mate, I guess it is back, baby, because it's all everyone is talking about. And look, you talked about drop downs, and we'll probably go through these drop downs, but you've obviously got to talk about Smith, Archer, Labu Shane. I really think these are the only things that matter in Test cricket today.
You have to sort of drop everything down to three, don't you? I mean, you know, Test cricket, it's full of nuance.
PowerPoint decks,
exactly. But capture it in three. People don't remember things in more than three. You need three forms of communication to get something into somebody's head. And you can also speak in terms of content. You can only speak in threes. So let's talk about it in that way. Archer, Smith, Labu Shane, the three big names from the test. Sure, Stokes scored a ton. Maybe we'll mention it later. Jofra Archer, frightening. Yeah. He's turned the series on its head. I mean, the whole thing was about, you know, acronyms for Smith. BSB, you know. Best since Bradman. Not talking about bank accounts.
I don't like the way that looks, because I immediately think about my bank account and my net worth, which is negative $600,000 after acquiring a mortgage.
Exactly. That was, something similar for me as well, post this tour we've just had. It was all about sort of best since Bradman. And now Archer just came and basically knocked him the fuck out. Didn't he? To Smith, and there was a few. Whoa. I guess there was a little bit of fallout from that, but like, just firstly, Yeah. Like, is that the first time you have watched another bowler be extremely frightening towards an Australian batsman, like in your major memory? Like, we had Kirtley growing up.
Yeah.
We had the Caribbean once or twice, but this was like facing a kid 3 or 4 years older than you. You know, like this to me elicited the anxiety that you would get, like watching the kid with a beard warm up before the game, who clearly had
early
gone through
PGs,
puberty.
You're 16, you know, the firebrand 20-year-old who's just played a bit of ones, has the new pill, and you're scared shitless.
Yeah, and you're watching them warm up before the game, like they're bowling off, you know, well, 20 yards on the other side of the square, and you're like, oh, he's quick. And he's only sort of going 75%. Like, that's a
feeling. Well, they were talking about how quick he was, but he really was quick, wasn't he? And he, you know, miles per hour. Again, that's a weird thing for me. Yeah. Miles. I'm used to kilometers.
I've googled the like equation so many times.
Yeah. What is it? Because he was up to like 96 point something.
Yeah. And I never actually googled it myself. That's like 154.15.
Oh, now I get it. Now I get one. Now that I see it through that prism, now I get it.
Exactly.
Mate, Archer is the villain, isn't he? And Smith is the hero. Mm. I mean, this is great redemption narrative for Smith, who's, you know, he's obviously pretty fresh off being suspended for all that sandpaper stuff. But now he's the victim. The tables have turned and we crave pantomime villains. Mm. And now we, Australia, us the nation, we have one in Archer. And look, I mean, maybe we can talk about the reactions or his reaction to hitting Smith. I mean, I'm sure we'll get to that. I mean, a fast bowler who laughs when he hits the premier batsman. I mean, don't worry that the laughing may have been taken out of context.
And, absolutely not.
You know, thanks to some clever editing. No, why worry about it? You know, rock bottom on The Simpsons when Homer Simpson was portrayed to be a sexual deviant. Doesn't matter. It's just what you see. So Archer is now, you know, he's our public enemy and rightly so.
Yeah, so you sort of had the same view that, like, he probably, maybe it was a nervous chuckle, maybe it was just Joss Butler saying, you know how cricketers, when they talk to each other in private but it's on TV, the commentators always say, look, he's probably just asking where he's going for dinner that night.
You know, it's always fucking chapel dinner. Era stuff. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Always dinner, where are we eating?
Where are you going for dinner?
Where are me and Redders eating?
There's no way they were saying that when Warner and Ian Healy spoke before they got Busted Ali out.
Don't you think, like, yeah, I mean, his reaction laughing. I mean, how are you meant to react to litting someone? I mean, I only did it very infrequently and not at great pace. Like, do you need to train for that? Because it's obviously a muscle memory thing, or just it's you can't control the reaction when you hit someone, or can you?
Yeah, like he probably crossed his mind that he'd like seriously injured Steve Smith or even something worse, and he's young and he's probably just like nervously laughed at something Joss Butler said, and then yes, it's been rock bottomed by The Simpsons, and we're happy for it because it's the media world we live in. You've got to make noise to get attention. But So let's move on. I mean, so Archer knocks Smith out of the test, and nearly Australia out of the game as a result. Yeah. And now there's a question about whether Smith will play in Leeds. We'll cover that on our Leeds review, Leeds preview, which is the next cast. Oh, okay. We're a little bit late because you know we're flying in the air and stuff. But So Smith, does Smith get booed off the field? Again, did he get rock bottomed there? I mean, I heard a few different pieces of audio. Sometimes I couldn't hear boos. Others were insisting there were boos. Does it have to be binary? Like, does it have to just be a case of all of Lords booed if like three people did?
I still haven't got confirmation on who booed or did they kick someone out? I think it was an MCC member that was the booer. I mean, someone has to be identified. You've got to finger point at one person at all times.
Yeah.
I think, you know, more broadly speaking about booing, like we obviously have a real problem in sport with booing, and there's obviously the argument that goes around that if you pay your money, you can boo anyone or anything you like. You know, as if paying for a ticket at market price gives you the right to act like a fucking sociopath. Like, and that's fine. You know, you're not Greg from accounts. You know, you don't earn $55,000 a year to type information into a database. You are the team you support, and you fucking can say what you want. You can boo whoever you want.
Mm. So you're defending the rights of booers, obviously.
No, well, I mean, look, everyone thinks you're a fuckwit if you boo. I mean, if you need to boo a player in order to feel something, then that's your problem. And there's probably some things lacking in your life, probably emotional relationships, firstly. I mean, you've probably got 3 burner accounts on Twitter. You know, you've got an egg profile pic for each of them, and you issue hate speech on a range of topics. In real life, you're getting absolutely nowhere, and that's just your journey.
that's exactly right. I don't know whether to confess this, but I went to Socceroos.
Safe space.
This is a really safe space. No, you're right. And thank you for encouraging this safe space that we're currently on. I went to Socceroos versus Uruguay in 2005, which was a World Cup qualifier. It was the greatest sporting event I've ever seen. For those who aren't aware of the background, most people will be aware, but if Australia were to win this game at home, they would progress to the World Cup for the first time in kind of, I think it was 30 years since Johnny Warren had been there. Since 1974, you know, curse had been lifted, etc. Playing against, you know, this sort of cunning South American team. I'm leaning on stereotypes because that's what we do in Australia, but... And I still remember at the Olympic Stadium at the time, everyone booed the Uruguayan national anthem, including...
Fuck me, it's nothing sacred.
Including your correspondent. And I just felt swept up in the primal nature of that event.
Yeah.
And I look back and, you know, I'm far more...
Game hasn't
now.
Even started.
Exactly. National anthem, get it. But it was kind of like it's destiny. It's just primal. We don't care. All bets are off. All morality is off. You know, I'd spent too much time like watching Australia lose in like scary South American qualifiers in the past with grainy footage and like dark dark lights, you know, and scary crowds. It was like, no, this is our time. And anyway, I just wonder if like
do you feel that
like
a little
that
bit now watching? I mean, I know that we were at Lords, you know, for a portion of it. We weren't actually there on the day that Smith got hit. But is it seeing it on a broadcast that isn't your home broadcast? Does that elicit more kind of nationalism in you that Smith was hurt? Whereas, you know, if Smith had been hit, you know, at the MCG on Boxing Day, he's in a different country. It's far away.
Our boys are away.
It's scary.
We're not far from Gallipoli. You know,
we've got to bring
a lot of
home.
Atrocities happened.
Yeah, unknown soldier stuff.
Exactly. And that's right. Look, maybe that's right. You feel too far away, so the only way you can kind of feel like you can contribute is to get onto Twitter and write something in under 280 characters.
Yep.
And then you can feel like you've sort of had your say and played your part, as many people are doing at the moment. I don't know, Dave, I guess...
But these are the moral ashes, aren't they?
It's not just
the ashes on the line, it's a fight for moral supremacy, and we're seeing that online. You know, Smith boos, justified or not. Archer, did he have the correct reaction to Lidding Smith? There's just so much moralising going on this Ashes online, and I'm all for it.
One piece of moralising that I do welcome is the extreme care that the English folk, from journalists to players to the public, are showing for Smith's recovery and kind of insisting look, he does need to look after himself, and for that reason it's probably best that he doesn't play at Headingley. And it's very kind of them,
I think to make
that really clear, and to, you know, in the face of what's been a very hostile Ashes with a lot on the line, to just ensure that those concussion protocols are properly enforced for safety reasons, I should add. News to hand, it seems to be emerging that he's not going to play in Leeds. There's a few pictures coming through of a glum Smith with Langer's arm around him. He may not have passed his tests. So
that's news to me.
Yeah, it's just...
Not to sound like an uninformed dipshit, but... I didn't get online.
I've seen one picture.
You're breaking this news to me.
I've seen one picture, and by the time this goes to air, Smith's probably been named for the side of Headingley.
If your mail is accurate, that obviously paves the way for a Labuschagne. Well, he may have played regardless, but a Labuschagne or Shuckney return to the fold. Not as a sub, not as a concussion sub, a like-for-like substitution, but an actual... number 4 or number 3 batsman for Australia at Leeds.
Mate, okay, so we've given Labuschagne just an inordinate amount of shit on this cast.
It really has been inordinate.
This enterprise has really latched onto Labuschagne as the kind of symbol of the like evolving Australian culture. You know, in the past, it was the hawkish kingdom of Balfours, obviously under Lehman. You get in with chests and pipes. I'm saying all this with my eyes closed, by the way.
Yeah. But looking down slightly, just under your eyelids.
Exactly. My eyelids are flapping about horrifically. But and now Labuschagne is kind of under the Langer tutelage of the spiritual faith.
The Langer family, yeah. Like the Manson family.
New Age. That's right. Like a, you know, muscle top interview yoga instructor, Cert 4 yoga instructor style of player with an eagle at the bottom of his back. And we've kind of, you know, expressed a bit of mirth about this. This isn't the Australia we know. This is not the great cricket that we know. And yet he comes out as a sub facing the guy that knocks out the best since Bradman, changes the series, you know, turns it on a dime, if you will, and gets smashed in the grill, second ball. Australia's, you know, trying to scale their Everest in this historic series for them.
The way he jumped up after getting hit on the grill as well, like he could not have gotten up quicker. That was fucking like a boxer being hit and just getting up immediately before anyone comes in to,
it was,
you know, check on his health.
Man, it was classic Labuschagne. You know, as they say.
Oh, yeah.
I did enjoy Jeff Fleming's description of it being like a cartoon character under an anvil. It was true. He really bounced the fuck up. And but he played an epic innings after that. I was quite like compelled by the whole thing. Like his technique, his toughness, his clear relish of that situation. Like other guys looked a bit scared. Genuinely, like you don't normally see that.
Other blokes just want to spoon one to cover and get the fuck out.
Get the fuck out of there. I want to see.
He went, this is my time. Exactly. You know, I believe in God. I believe in every. I believe in religion and shit. It fucking seems to be working. Mate, I mean,
I was thinking about it when he was out there. I was like, I wonder how much he's thinking about God.
Yeah, you know,
and can I just say, it gave me a little bit of hope. this is a safe space, right?
Yeah, it's a safe space. I mean, I immediately got on my Kindle. I got on my Kindle and downloaded the Bible. It's only $10 on Kindle and worth every page. I mean, he must have had, because he went out there with true belief. I mean, you're right. Everything was stacked against him. Day five, Archer bowling fucking 180 kilometres an hour or whatever. He went out there with belief, and maybe that's something that, you know, snarky internet guys who, you know, write tweets in lowercase just don't have, you know, belief and a belief in something. I mean, I find it hard to believe in God personally, given, you know, that life is essentially a sequence of random events and we live in the age of big data where we're constantly searching for meaningful patterns to derive insights into shit. But maybe we just need to take a leaf from Langer's book and Labuschagne, the Bible, that is.
Put it this way. If you want someone batting for your life, or let's just say to win the Ashes, both the same thing, especially if you consider Steve Smith's life views and on Ashes, these things, same thing, would you prefer a huge God botherer or a snarky lowercase internet speak guy, you know, from Twitter? Presume that everything else is the same in terms of their technique. Yeah, do you want the God guy?
Two very, very diverse options you're giving me.
Yeah.
No, I think, mate, I'm a minus Dave O'Tear.
Me too. He's the answer.
He's the secret. Mm. Yeah, the secret. Remember that book? Power of Positive Thinking. Law of Attraction. You can manifest good shit if you think positively. Mm. I'm going to get into it and
manifest destiny.
Marnus for it. Manifest destiny. That's it.
Did you see Joe Root's claim it catch by any chance? Did you catch any of that?
No.
It was just a good. That this was how Marnus got out. He was on 59.
Didn't realise it was Root. I did see it.
Yeah.
It was a good claim it.
Yeah, really good.
Always claim it.
Yeah. Except
like, when
just
there's like 86 cameras, you know, from various angles.
What's that whole conversation of like
expose you?
But the fielder knows. Well, they don't always know. You know, you can dive forward. It's all a bit of a blur. And you're like, my fingers got under.
Who are the proponents of the fielder always knows philosophy?
Mm.
But I'm sure it's the names that, you know, his Chapwood, he would always have known, wouldn't he? Healy, he'd have known.
It's like
Would Warney have known?
It's the type of bounce you get as well. It's a whole thing. Anyway, yeah, I mean, there was a pretty decent bounce, but also I'm sure that Joe Root was like, you know, I got it, so I'm going to put my finger up and I'd like my team to win this game. And similarly,
well, so much would have been happening. You know, the wind would have been whistling through his ears. Exactly. His eyes wouldn't have been looking at the ball. There's so many reasons why he might not have known. I mean, you got to forgive him for that.
Mm.
Happened to any of us.
Exactly. Okay, so Ben Stokes, great 100. Sorry to the English people there. I watched it. It was fantastic. He blunted Nathan Lyon. He rendered him insipid and gave England a chance of winning. I just thought we might quickly talk, before we talk to Coco, which is what he's asked us to call him, maybe just a brief word on our Lord's experience. It doesn't include reflections on lunch because no member of the public gives a fuck what people eat at lunch for free.
Not as good as Edgbaston though, mate. Yeah, come on.
Jesus Christ.
Just to completely, you know, talk about things that are inaccessible to 99.9% of people who listen to this podcast.
Yeah. People love listening to that stuff. Oh, tell us about your free lunch. Tell us about the rest of Lords, though, just to keep the exclusivity going.
Yeah.
No, I mean, take us into Lords. It's just people wearing some... think of like SCG members times 10 with preppiness.
Oh, fucking people in London are so preppy, aren't they? Like I was actually staying in Dulwich while I was there, which, you know, some of our listeners might be familiar with. And that is just preppy as fuck.
Mm.
And everyone's just walking around with nice haircuts, good skin, you know, collared shirts with logos on them, like polos and stuff. And you just in the summer, there's just nowhere better to be. I mean, you obviously feel like a massive intruder, as I do from Australia, and as I felt at Lord's amongst these mainly beautiful people, some absolute fucking
feel like the intruder in Australia too, but it's a different social and political issue. Problem, but that's a different cast that we do.
But I mean, it was a nice day. It wasn't the weather came out. I mean, we were only there for day two, you and I. But, you know, that was a full day's play. Sun was out. It was busy, wasn't it? And we even got recognised by a few people, which was startling and confronting. But, you know, please DM us the photos. We'd love to see them that you took with us. But we had a great day out. Like, Lord's is fantastic. I mean, it's the home of cricket. What were your takeaways from a day at Lord's?
Like, it was a total bucket list thing to be able to do in my life, to see Australia versus England at Lord's. And I turned up on day one for the entire day's play where it pretty much pissed down and there was never a chance of play. But that's life, isn't it? A series of random events, as you said earlier. But it made it's great. It's great that it was a special test match. I think it's going to be an incredible series. And, yeah, like it's – there are a lot of – like, you know, it is the kind of – it's the upper class ground, and people are there. Like,
was there anything that surprised you about Lords?
Well, the slope didn't. the slope didn't, as I'd seen it before. Oh, just like one word on the slope, though. This is getting super because sort of being anti slope chat is a bit elitist in itself. It's kind of like we're aware
internet shit.
Like my dad told me that he's never been to Lords before. He loves cricket. And he used to go to like the Lane Cove Library in the 1960s and be fascinated as a little boy by stories of the slope, and like, and it doesn't come.
Those
across.
The interwar years, yeah, it was a different time.
It was a different time, and there were fewer things to do. He couldn't write in lowercase internet speak on Twitter and stuff like that. He just went to the library and read about cricket, and like you do go there and you see it and you're like, this is actually a problem. This is messed up that there's even a field like this. Is this regulation? Yeah. Is this passable? I mean, is this dangerous? But, you know, they've managed to...
I mean, that's what we think as Australians, because everything needs to be hard, flat and...
Yeah, standardised.
Get a fucking set square out between the boundary and the grass and, you know, every flat surface in Australia either has a cricket pitch on it or a block of Meriton apartments. This is what we do with flat areas in Australia.
Correct.
But in England... you can have a cricket ground where there's a massive gradient on it and sometimes even a fucking tree on the field. I mean, they'll play around it. In Australia, we would bulldoze that tree. That's just what we do in Australia. So I enjoyed the quaintness of the slope. And I don't enjoy talking about it every 3 minutes, but I enjoy it as a thing to look at. And that's what I think about that.
Okay, coming up next... Coming up next, Logie nominated presenter, New South Wales fast bowler, leading shield wicket taker of the year, and unfortunate to miss out on the Ashes squad. Trent Copeland.
Look, to be honest, I don't try and take the piss too much, but the problem is you start to get a little bit bored. So I try and do the right thing by the competition, I must admit. Wow. When I go there, I try and play conventionally, but realistically, I'm thinking from ball one, I just want to park this fucking thing into the car park. But you don't want to come out of it and people say, look at that arsehole Hodgie, you know, so... Yeah, what a prick. But, yeah, I mean, it's good fun.
Well, I think this is his second appearance on the TGC cast, possibly third, but this man also did a number of live shows with us last summer. He's since been nominated for a Logie. He's obviously one of the best presenters on Channel 7 Cricket. He's probably one of the best presenters in world cricket, and I'm just surprised he's talking to us at all. I'm sure his fee for live shows this summer would be far higher. I'm talking about Trent Copeland. Trent, welcome to The Great Cricketer.
Thanks for having me again, lads. Privileged.
you stumbled over the privilege word. Just said, yeah. Sorry, Higos couldn't be here as well. And I should say for the listeners out there that you're on the Sunshine Coast at the moment. It's about 8:30 at night. It's probably a beautiful, a balmy evening up there. Many people are in the UK at the moment, braving a little bit of rain, some gloomy weather. What are you doing up there?
Well, firstly, cheers, Higos. Yeah, weak as piss. Literally. But anyway, we move on. We're up here for a New South Wales Blues pre-season camp. We've got our whole squad, all our support staff up here, staying just across the road from the beach. It's been mid to late 20s every day. I am looking like a beetroot at the moment, but it's been great, actually.
Trent, we're going to get into the Ashes in a big way now. I mean... Scott Morrison has weighed into the discussion on Twitter, and obviously you know something has hit fever pitch in terms of triggering the emotions of barbecue land Australia when ScoMo gets involved. But what's your take on the the brewing hostilities between England and Australia, and I guess the fallout from Archer's spell against Smith? I mean, what was your take on the whole situation?
Well, honestly, it's been one of the most gripping series that I can recall, probably since the 2005 Ashes. I don't know what you guys think, but having been over there, but certainly watching from the lounge room and talking amongst cricketers back here, it is one of those ones where you intend to go to bed at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and you find yourself looking at the clock and all of a sudden it's 3 a.m. It's been brilliant to watch.
Terrible for the economy. Yeah, productivity is at all time low in Australia.
yeah, exactly. But it's been, you know, great of Steve Smith, the stuff that he's achieving. And it's really a huge shame for the series that he's going to miss the third test. But look, what he is achieving, having 12 months off from the game and then coming back, going 100, 100 and then 90, and it took a really nasty blow for him to be sort of knocked out of that game. So that, as well as Jofra Archer bursting onto the scene in his test debut, I mean, I wrote an article last week about, I genuinely think that could be the missing piece that England have needed alongside Anderson and Broad for a long time. They could be looking at some, you know, world domination coming up, which is painful to say.
Mate, can you just, as a pro cricketer, can you just, a test cricketer, like, give a bit of an insight into what someone like Jofra Archer does to an opposition? Because if you just look at the face of his figures for the last test, he took 5 wickets. It's obviously, that's a great return for someone on debut, but it was so much more than that. I mean, you know, personally, I hadn't seen Australian batsmen so rushed in almost living memory for me. Is that how you saw it as well? I mean, how big an impact was it, and what do you think it does to the series?
Well, yeah, I think it's just the attitude, and you could almost feel the energy around the contest when he was bowling. Much like the Mitchell Johnson spells of yesteryear, it just had that little aura of guys not wanting to be out there facing it. Particularly in the dark and when there was some really bowler-friendly conditions. he just looks like he's got that X factor that we often have in our Australian lineups. And closing out an innings is going to be big for them. They've always had skill with the new ball. They've always had good spin bowlers to go with those quicks. But having someone like Jofra, like we have with Stark and Pattinson and Cummins and guys like that, where you can just knock over 9-10 jack in a flash. The one thing I have thought about over the last couple of days is it might work in our favour. The English batters might get a little rusty because there's no one putting their hands up to bat in his net. That is for sure.
Especially in fast fading light at 6 p.m.
He's bowling off 18 yards.
Look, I mean, just put yourself into the Australian camp for a moment, Trent. I mean, look, if what happened to Steve Smith, like if that doesn't heighten their resolve, I mean, we've got a reason now to go out and defy something and do it for Steve Smith. I mean, we saw it with Bradman 1930s with body line and that he was mortal. And I guess we've now seen that Steve Smith is mortal too. I mean, what do you think the impact of what's happened to him will be on the Australian dressing room?
Yeah, look, it'll be massive. I mean, you think back to the test matches in the last 12 months where we haven't had David Warner and Steve Smith. It's been tough work. There's been guys asked to step up and be dominant players scoring big hundreds that have never had to do it before. So that's going to be a challenge. You know what I love, though, was Big Marnus walks in, gets hit in the melon second ball, jumped up like a karate fighter straight away after getting hit, and then went on to get a really important 59 in that second inning. So, I mean, it may be a little bit of let's everyone stand up for Steve Smith, but there might be a little bit of the rest of the dressing room realising how desperate some other guys are to get into that team. And having someone do that could be, bloody inspirational, really.
Well, I think that's a really good point, Trent. Like, when we're over in the UK, we just saw endless articles about how, because of the fear about Steve Smith, endless articles talking about how to get him out. You know, there were psychologists weighing in. There were people with all sorts of different tactical views. Some even suggested you've got to play to his OCD, which I thought was a little bit, that was trivialising actually quite a serious disease. But how would you do it in reverse for Jofra Archer? Like, can you give the optimistic perspective around how you might get on top of him and start dealing with him? Because, he looked to have the measure of just about everybody apart from Marnus in the last match. Like, what's the positive view on how to defeat or overcome the big boss, Jofra Archer?
Make us feel good.
Well, I guess the danger for England is that he could actually feel like he's in a zone where he's untouchable on the back of one game, and the Aussies can really play on that. I think, he's a quality bowler, but he's also a very inexperienced bowler. So if he's put into that limelight where he wants to come on and maybe just misreads the situation and bowls too short in a situation where someone like Travis Head could get away on the scoreboard, or David Warner, gets those early boundaries away, and that kickstarts him into a world-class innings we know he's definitely capable of. So I'd say that it'd be that. The Aussie change room would be talking about the fact that he bowled around about 50 overs for 79 runs or whatever it was, really didn't put scoreboard pressure on him. So I would have thought that, guys, go out there and play your natural game. Take him on. He's coming full head of steam at you. Go back at him.
Yeah, just bat a meter out of your crease and just take him on. I mean, that's what I would do.
And
in
you know what?
Cricket.
You know what? It's easy for me to say that because I would never do that.
What about what about David Warner, Trent? I mean,
what's wrong with Davey?
What's wrong with him? The thinking is now that if you're going to make a single figure score, then you may as well go out blazing. And everyone's just saying, look, he's just got to go out and play his natural game. He's got to go out and just start smashing guys everywhere. It's surely a little bit more complicated than that. Like, what advice are you giving David, as you would have given him the last few days with our endless text messages?
Yeah, I guess the same as you give any opening batsman in a test series in England. Don't freak out. I think back yourself that you've scored a mound of runs over a long career. I think that guys on the other side of the ledger in this England team are struggling as well for runs. It's just been that they're key moments, they've probably just held it together like Ben Stokes the other day. So, look, I think he and Cameron Bancroft, if he's selected for the third test, you know, they should back themselves in. It only takes sort of 30 balls to get back into Nick. Well, certainly that's what I tell myself when I keep missing them. look, I think he's certainly got big runs around the corner.
It's interesting you say that about, you know, the way to get back is just to remember the times that you were dominant. I think I've seen some other commentators talk about, you know, how Davey Warner just needs to, you know, watch some highlights of when he was, you know, smacking balls around the park. Is that what you do when you're kind of down in the dumps? Do you kind of turn on, you know, footage of you taking fifers? Like, does Davey Warner literally need to lock himself in his hotel room and watch 6 hours of David Warner classics on YouTube, as curated by Rob Rob Bitter?
Possibly. I've actually got quite a funny story about that. Today, sitting down in the morning session where a couple of us weren't involved in the centre wicket scenario, and one of them was Steve O'Keefe, who notably tells me that you guys told him that he was a much better guest than me on the live show, so thanks for that.
We say that to everyone, to be fair.
But he was talking about, you know, some of the guys and their ball striking in the middle, you know, clearing the pickets, and he's like, oh, I used to be able to do that. And I was like, well, what is it that you did back then? And I remembered this big toe tap that he used to do and then just clear the fence at will against the likes of Dirk Nannis. And so he got up highlights of himself batting. Next minute, he's in the nets, and all you can hear from 50 metres away is, like, I'm back, boys, I'm back. So maybe it might be that.
I have the same thing with work, actually. If I'm down in the dumps, I just go through my best emails ever. But what do you do? I mean, Trent, you know, Joe Root's catch, obviously, one of the great claimants of all time. Thoughts?
Andy Bickle didn't hold back today, I noticed. So that was interesting. Look, I've been known to claim them when they bounce in grey cricket. Just depends on your opposition, I guess. I'm only joking.
Yeah. No, you've just lost your job. Trent, sorry, it's starting to get silly. You've just been really nice and generous and giving us your time while you're up on the Sunshine Coast, where you could be doing far better things. So thank you very much for that analysis. And I mean, we can obviously catch you on Channel 7 this summer, can't we? You would have been one of the first signed up for the entire broadcast.
Well, they actually put me on hold with my negotiations to make sure they got the TGC boys back. So hopefully you guys are locked in, and then I will be too.
Well, they've put us on hold as well, just indefinitely. Yeah. We haven't heard anything whatsoever. Still waiting.
Well, good luck with it, lads. Hopefully I'll get there too.
Thanks, mate. Thanks, Trent. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
It's that time of the show, Dave, where we pay homage to our great mates at Budgie Smuggler, who made our UK tour possible. What we're focusing on, and we have for the last couple of weeks, is custom smugglers. It's not enough in this world to accept, one-way mono-style communication. You know that. Free-to-air TV is dead.
Off-the-shelf products are dead. You know, it's all about customising and configuring what you want, when
it's
you want.
It's about being part of the conversation. It's about contributing to democracy. We're all in this together, and that's why Budgie Smuggler, intelligent innovators at Budgie Smuggler, have created custom smugglers. It's not their designs you're taking. You're not taking designs from Reg Mombasa. You're not taking boutique designs from unknown Melbourne artists at marked up prices. You're getting your own design in there, whatever it is that you want, on a Budgie Smuggler. And I know when you go for a swim, and I know when you go to the beach, and I know when you're at home or in any kind of, you know, private sexual tryst, you want your own design on your smugglers. You don't want something from Lisa Ho.
You want to feel comfortable. I love it. You don't have to be a designer these days. You don't have to have any kind of skills. You don't have to be a journalist. The citizen journalism for that. Just make your own stuff. Bring a file to Budgie. They'll sort it out. Just bring your idea to them and they'll make it happen.
This isn't Web 1.0 or even 2.0 anymore.
No.
This is the full gamut. You're in charge. You're driving now in life. You're driving in life as
you
There's
not life. Many chances in life to take charge like this. I mean, we live in an ever-evolving world, which is fast and furious and scary at times. One thing that is comforting is to know that, you know, the swimwear that you put on, You're behind that. You've created
that's
that.
That's right.
That's your chance to kind of put your own stamp on what you wear.
And you would agree, particularly in your line of business, Dave, that it's just not enough anymore in business to be dictating to the consumer what it is they will consume. They must be able to customize. They must be able to make it bespoke to them and their life. And that's what the good people at Budgie Smuggler are doing with their smugglers.
Mm. Customer's king, always said that.
BudgieSmuggler.com.au.
Lots of laughs as well.
I love the Twitter account. It's great. I follow it a great deal, and even while I understand not even half of it, I still love it.
What perfect endorsement could you have?
Okay, it's that time. Let's ask TGC. You know what to expect, or do you? Let's just roll around in the mud of usually male dysfunction. Okay, Anonymous writes in, Dear Ask TGC, I'm a 35-year-old married man with a 15-month-old daughter. I've got a reasonable job, a wide circle of friends, and good social capital. I've played club cricket for most of my adult life, but thanks to your show, I've recently realised I hate the game. Last Friday, I went out for a drink to celebrate a friend's birthday. Being a new father, I don't get out much these days, and I ended up blind drunk at 1 a.m. staggering home, woke the whole house up trying to find the toilet, and then the next day was so ill that I had to stay in bed until 10 a.m. considered to be a lie-in these days. Well, it is. Unfortunately, we were playing a meaningless second 11 game 2 hours away in the afternoon. I had to be picked up by a teammate, still being too drunk to drive. We stopped for a pre-match McDonald's where I threw up in the car park. We also had to pull over twice on the 50-mile trip to the ground so I could be sick. When I got home at 9:30 that night, written actually 21:30, like it is in the army, my wife was not speaking to me due to my behaviour the previous night and the fact I'd been an absent parent all day. I went straight to bed. However, I took 5-4 against the bottom of the league and gave one of their lads a huge send-off. So my question is, what will it take to make me quit cricket? Yours sincerely, Anonymous.
It started out so nicely, this question, then it quickly deteriorated into just a cycle of problematic drinking and self-hate. Look, I mean, he's asking what will it take to quit cricket. Well, clearly, cricket will drive you away from your family if you continue on this.
In which case you might just stay with the game, given you've got nothing left anyway.
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah. If you lose everything, your wife, you lose custody of your child, then maybe only then you'll understand you need to get your shit together, and that's when you stop paying subs and playing cricket, if you are even playing subs.
I have to say, you're sort of waiting for the punchline of the question, and then it comes, and then it comes when it says, however, I took 5-4 against the bottom of the league. Okay, well done.
Yeah.
But then again, I respect that he is anonymous. So I hope that answers your question, Anon.
All right. This one comes from George Condon. He says, Dear Ask TGC, I'm currently over here in the UK doing a season for a local side and recently played in a staff versus old boys match at the prep school I was a gap student at during my gap year. My English girlfriend decided to come and watch the game, in which I notched a classy 58 not out and was seen as the scary quick, being only person to reach over 110 kilometres an hour in this village match, taking 3-for-10 in an MVP performance. Being a specialist keeper who bats 9 in second grade back home, how do I explain to my girlfriend, his English girlfriend, I should remind you, that I am not an alpha fast bowler and am rather a beta wicketkeeper whose suggestion of bowling in a match is met with the same giggle as watching the opposition's best batsman spoon your young off-spinner's half-tracker to the only man on the leg side boundary the over before drinks. Cheers, George.
Okay, so I don't think you have to explain it, George. I mean, it's better.
No, I think he does need to explain it, and the only way he can explain it is to take his English girlfriend back home to Australia to watch a game of cricket, meet his teammates and his family, and then only then, having been able to compare English and Australian club cricket firsthand, primary sources are important, as you know, only then can she make a reasoned assessment of his virility. I think that's the only way for her to understand truly.
Why would George do that? I mean, you know, philosophically speaking, I mean, perception is reality. We've spent a lot of time in the UK playing cricket, and there's a lot of people there who are very bad at cricket at club level, but they live in a bubble or in their own community where they're actually good. And that probably feels much better than just being a cucked second grader in Sydney who's actually...
So does his girlfriend think that he's an alpha fast.
I don't think his girlfriend thinks anything. I think he just came to one game and he did well, and now he's king of the house in his own mind.
But he's like, oh, how do I explain to her that I'm actually not an alpha fast bowler? I'm really a beta wicketkeeper. You're not going to do that because you'll be diminished in her eyes forever, and she'll break up with you immediately, and rightly so.
Ben Drury writes, all right, troppers, good to get around you blokes tonight. This is written while we're in the UK. Top alpha work from Aggers to fuck off into the crowd at Edgbaston so you had to be interviewed by Dan Norcross and his yuck Hawaiian shirts on TMS the other day.
Oh, my God.
That's a muddle of emotions, that whole thing. As someone who was picked as first-team captain because I've got a Skoda Fabia Estate, I don't know what that means, and so can A, fit,
a, car, is it, or some
a fit the club kit in the boot, and B, oh, it's a car, B, give a couple of blokes a lift to away matches, I'm acutely aware of my shortcomings as a cricketer. Having started the year with a couple of good knocks against shit Sheffield 4th 11s, I'm currently on 2 ducks in a row. Do I keep batting myself at 4 in the hope that my dad will see me do something if he ever comes to watch? Or do I do the decent thing and bat at 9, only turning up to whisper abuse at batters much better than me from first slip? Is it in fact more alpha to bat yourself so low down? Or does it make me a rare cuck? That was TGC bingo. Here.
Yeah, he really hit all the KPIs there, didn't he? I'll take the dad stuff.
Okay.
So what he's saying here, that do I keep batting myself at 4 in the hope that my dad will come and see me do something if he ever comes to watch? Well, if you're timing your innings on the basis that your dad might turn up, then you should probably open, shouldn't you? Because otherwise, you know, give yourself the most opportunity time-wise to maximise the chance that he might turn up, because you know, otherwise your team might win the game one down and you're sitting there with your fucking pads on waiting to bat, which is a more forlorn, desperate image for him to arrive on should he turn up. So I if you're batting anywhere, I'd say open the batting. But you're probably scared of the new ball, as I am, and you probably want to bat yourself down the order. Reframing it as in being alpha to bat yourself so low down, it's not alpha. Not in my book. It just means you're bad at cricket.
Yeah, I mean, normally these questions, when the dad is kind of central to it, will introduce the father early. But this guy had managed to talk about Jonathan Agnew, Dan Norcross's fashion, owning a Skoda Fabia estate. The estate bit threw me because there's a lot of old money in England. Club kits, driving, away matches, Sheffield, batting 4. And then the dad comes into play out of nowhere.
It's a bit of a non sequitur, isn't it? Because everything else in this question is just laced with aggression. It's not the kind of person that would openly hope that dad would come to watch. It's the kind of guy that, you know, maybe comes from a broken home, maybe blazes his own trail, doesn't care where dad is, maybe doesn't know where dad is. That's fine. That's all fine. But, you know, to have that insecurity within all this aggressive language within the question is jarring.
And that's what I say, Ben, because when you write, you strike me as someone who cannot be over the age of, say, 20 or 21, just from a maturity perspective. And I see your attempts to be self-deprecating, and that's good. I think that's a good sign.
And we see through
generally
those.
Speaking, because, you know, to be humble is to understand that we're all, you know, full of fault as humans. However, you keep, as soon as you start to get self-deprecating, if I'm going to read into this, you then kind of quickly flip back to an alpha perspective. And that's why you end by saying, what is more alpha? Well, in fact, it's not about what is more alpha, Ben. It's just about what is more real. Okay, leave the alpha alone. And when you start getting real, Ben, when you leave the alpha alone, that, my friend, is truly alpha.
Oh, man, this is fucking love song dedication.
Exactly.
Fucking rare and wild.
We've been 2/3 of the Grade Cricketer. Thanks for tuning in to this altogether differently toned podcast. Just goes to show we all play our own role, don't we? And when one of us falls away, well, we all suffer and this thing gets worse. But it's been fun.
Sorry. I don't fucking I liked it. It was different.
Yeah, I did like it too. I don't know what the fuck I'm saying. I did like it.
Yeah.